Doesn't that computer know who you
are? Don't they have any idea?
Bow down to the Tech Talk host.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
Behold the glory that is me.
A little while ago, I was installing some software, and I ran across this exact same
thing. I find you pompous, judgmental, and completely self-absorbed. Would you be my friend?
Onto a Windows Vista machine.
You would think.
You'd think there'd be no problem.
How could there be a problem with that?
I'd say in a given week, I probably only do about 15 minutes of real, actual work.
Directory permissions with config.msi directory, blah, 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 blah.
This is Tech Talk.
Good morning. This is Tech Talk. Oh my gosh. We lost Dave. We've got Dave. He's coming. Where is he? Is he there?
I'm here.
There he is. Oh my gosh. Good morning. I was playing Chicago Is Not Chicago by Soul Coffin. I should have been doing Bust a Beelzebub. We lost you. I don't know where.
Actually, my laptop was struck by a meteorite.
Oh, it's too bad there wasn't an early warning system in place for that. we are going to be talking a lot about meteorites today. We've got Alex Knapp, who is the science and tech editor, blogger extraordinaire from Forbes magazine, and he's geeked out as I am to talk about some of the things going on with the meteor activity here this last week.
Well, I know you're covering that later. I did want to say just a couple of things about that. One was first of all, it's amazing all the footage that was captured by the dashboard cameras of drivers in Chelyabinsk. Mm-hmm. Chelyabinsk, and it turns out they have those because there's so many lawsuits and claims for damage for auto accidents and scams for pedestrian accidents, like that kind of thing.
Yes, yeah. I just found that fascinating when I heard. I was at a dinner party last night, and someone brought that up. And I that just astonishes me. It didn't really occur to me that there's so many great videos and pictures of this, and it's because there's such a rampant insurance fraud, and it's so difficult to get accidents paid for by the insurance companies there, that just about everybody's got little dashboard video cams going all the time.
Yeah, but so that's just astonishing. Not only that there's that much footage, but that it went around the world so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a real monument to the current state of technology.
Yes.
The other thing I wanted to say about it is that Carnival Cruise Lines is actually trying to blame the incident in the Caribbean with the ship the Triumph on the meteorite.
No, they're not. Are you serious?
Yeah, there's footage. There's footage.
Oh, no. That can't be. My son is trying to blame not turning his homework in on that too. You know,
that'd be a good one. You know, just burn the paper a little bit. You know,
bring it to school. Exactly. It burned. I'm sorry, I lost my. It burned up in the meteor shower. man, I don't know. You know, what is the world coming to? The whole Carnival cruise line. Now, my wife and I constantly talk about going on one of these cruises. Now's a good time. Now's a good time to go out and buy yourself some Carnival cruise tickets. I'm sure price is dropping dramatically. The stock, I know, for them went down like 5%. So,
yeah. Well, the conditions were horrible. You know, there were, you know, sewage backed up and everything like that. But they were giving away free wine and beer. I mean, what's to complain about?
Oh, phew. Man, if they got enough of that,
I'll sign up for that deal.
Exactly. I gotta poop over the poop deck. That's okay with me. Give me another extra couple of wines it was one of the senior. Not execs, but one of the senior officers from Carnival. I was listening to him on CNN or CNBC, I don't know, one of these things, and he was saying, his comment was, when every deck becomes the poop deck, then you know you've got problems. And this was from somebody from Carnival. I thought that was classic. That was just great.
Speaking of words with two O's in them, Google.
I was wondering where you were going to go with that.
Google's opening up brick and mortar stores. Did you know that?
I did not know
that. Yeah, they are. Yeah.
Wow. So you can just walk in there and ask them anything.
Yeah. No, wouldn't that be great? Wouldn't that be great? I mean, they'd be more accountable, you know, if they were actually there in person.
Yeah, it'd be like those old timey things. What were they called? Oh, the library. That's right. It'd be like the library. You just walk in and
out. They want to compete with Microsoft and Apple. You know, Microsoft now has brick and mortar stores, and so does Apple, of course.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so they by the holiday season this year, they want to have a lot of them up and running.
Now, with these.
They might offer the drive your own, you know, the cars that drive themselves.
Oh, really? Oh, man. They're going to be putting those in the stores. Okay.
No, I don't know. That's just the rampant speculation what they will offer. They've of course, got their tablets and, you know, Chromebooks and smartphones and that sort of thing they can offer. But also, have you heard about Google Glass? Do you know what that is?
Well, I've heard of the Google Glasses, you know, that you can put on.
Exactly. They're calling it Google Glass.
So basically, you
wear glasses that can perform many or all of the same functions that a smartphone could do.
Yes. Yep. Yep. I'm very excited about that. You know, particularly now that I've reached an age where I wear glasses again. I would love to add some additional functionality to that other than just making up for the poor job that nature did on my eyes.
That'll be a super geeky way to get into glasses.
Yes, exactly. And it'll become a fashion statement again. And they'll probably have, you know what they're going to come out with? And I need to do this. I need to come out with this right now before somebody steals this idea and makes millions of dollars off of it. You create fake Google Glasses that looks like they're real, but they're not. So you can be the cool kid on the block. Remember how they used to have fake cell phones? You could get a fake cell phone and pretend you were talking on the phone. This is the wave of the future. As soon as this show is done, that's it. I'm running out. I'm going to make this, and I'm going to patent it and sell it.
I'll make a fortune. Give Hong Kong a call. Give Taiwan a call.
That's right.
I'm sure you can get them a billion copies made up in no time.
That's it.
You know what'll be really great about these? You'll have like a much better excuse for not paying attention to other people.
Yes.
This will be a brand new. And speaking of which, both of us have time limits this morning, and I don't want you to be late. So should we part company now or?
It's what time is it? It's about 10 after. If I'm going to bring Jay on and then we're going to have Alex on. Yeah, we should probably start talking about closing you out and going to the next stage of the show.
No, we don't have to talk about it. We could just do it.
Just do it. Did you have anything you wanted to leave listeners with? We'll have you back on for probably about the same amount of time next week.
Well, no, I hear there's a zombie plan for dealing with the asteroid problem.
A zombie plan.
The zombies are concerned about asteroids hitting Earth, so they plan to eat. They love to eat brains, they plan to eat smart people's brains.
Ah.
So that they will assimilate that knowledge, and then they can solve the problem.
Ah.
And I myself am at no risk whatsoever. I think you're at some risk.
Yes.
Jay Gartman's in big trouble, I think.
Yes, but. Yeah, I think Jay and our upcoming guest Alex Knapp from Forbes, they're gonna be first on that list. I don't have to worry for a while. I think I'm a ways down the hit list for the zombie the coming zombie smart attack. I don't even know what to say about this, Dave.
If you're hungry in the neighborhood, you might be in trouble, but I don't think they're gonna go way out of their way to look for you.
No, that's right. That's right.
Anyway,
hey.
love the listeners, love you, and we'll talk another time. We'll talk maybe next week.
Yeah, thanks for coming on the show. We'll talk to you next week for sure. Thanks, Dave. All right. Oh, yeah. Okay, well, he's gone. I think we lost him. Anyways, it was a little bit of a rough connection regardless. We do need to bring Jay Gartman on, though, right away. That was Dave Sparky Saganaki. Always great to have him on. Calling in from the Great White North. so always good to have them. You know, they should change that Skype ring, I think, for
hello.
Good morning, Mr. Garmin. Hey.
How you doing, sir?
Pretty good. It's one of those days where I'm clicking and mousing and flying all over the boards here trying to coordinate everybody. We got a number of people on today. So I'm glad that we were able to make the connection here so quickly with you. That's awesome. Apparently the meteor shower did not impact your internet connection.
No, because I'm not a Russian taxi driver.
with the car mounted dash camera car camera.
Exactly.
So excellent. Interestingly, there have been a few more localized meteor things happening. I guess there was one in California, in fact, pretty much the same day. There was a fireball that people saw going across the sky at that time.
Well, you know, that could have just been somebody's ego from Hollywood not ending the way they wanted it to. So.
they burnt like a candle, but quickly but brightly, and flamed out over L.A. I think that is a pretty archetypal story there for Hollywood, isn't it? So Jay, we had and I'm going to keep us moving fairly quick. Like I said, unfortunately, we had last week, we had a question now that you were not with us. You were not available. So I was forced to put my best spin on it and ask you the question, which was about what piece of software and it was so apropos too, considering what was happening on the East Coast last week. What was the first what was a piece of software that was designed specifically in reaction to a blizzard?
Yeah, so it was a major piece of historical software designed in reaction to a blizzard. And the answer is the world's first bulletin board system. Ward Christensen is the guy who developed it. He's also the guy that did the X-Modem protocol, for those of us that are old enough
to remember that. Oh, yes.
in the famous Chicago blizzard of 1978 that basically shut the whole city down for 3 weeks, he's like, well, I got some spare time. Why don't I turn this whole modem protocol into what he at the time termed a computer answering machine? Only it didn't take calls from people, it took calls from other computers. And this was the CBBS, the Computer Bulletin Board System, which was the basic foundation of all dial-up bulletin board systems that followed. So he basically invented the bulletin board system for dial-up modems because he was snowed in 1978.
Oh, man. And I have... great memories of in the late 80s. Was it late 80s? Yeah, I guess it must have been late 80s. Getting the Computer Reader magazine for Chicago. And at the back of it, there was about 3 pages or so of numbers that you could call to connect with these BBSs and all that. And the numbers were frequently wrong, which when you were dialing them at 1 a.m. was irritating not only to yourself, but the people on the other end of the line who got to listen to your modem squealing.
They get the handshake sound like they're being faxed from the bowels of hell at 2 a.m.
Exactly. Oh, man. And that was right around the time, too, when the Star 69 became popular. So people would, or became a possibility, so people would call me back sometimes and yell at me.
Just making friends left and right, weren't you?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, it never ends for me. I'm... I'm still doing it. At least I'm not bugging people that way anymore. I tend to tee people off on Facebook now, screaming at them about their desire to buy homeopathic remedies and things like this. So I find a new way every couple of years, you know.
Well, you know, now you have broadcast powers every Saturday, so some poor fool just wanders across the radio dial. He can't help but endure you.
This is true. This is exactly right. And from what I understand, I was just looking at our demographics here. We actually have a terrestrial coverage area of over 200,000 individuals. So now what percentage of that actually make the mistake of of leaving the dial on 98.3. I don't know, but I was just surprised at the actual span of our radio coverage. It actually covers a pretty widely populated area out here.
Wow, that's a lot of potential victims right there. That's interesting. I don't think Hiroshima took that many people.
I was just gonna say, if you see our tower, if you think of that as ground zero, we do pretty good. We do pretty good. Oh man! And speaking of ground zero, and I know we touched on the meteorites and all this. So I know that you told me, you warned me, and I would have expected nothing less of you, Jay. That the question for the week this week is about, of course, what's on everybody's minds: meteorites and asteroids and things falling to Earth and all this good stuff.
Right. So, just to put everyone's mind at ease, the odds of you being killed by a meteorite are 1 in 700,000. Mm-hmm. So you're more likely to die in a fireworks accident than you are to be killed by a meteorite. However, you're more likely to be killed by a meteorite than by a terrorist, which makes me think all of this Homeland Security funding we have needs to go into asteroid defense. But that's a whole separate conversation.
And you're also more likely then to be killed by a meteorite than to win the lottery. So
yes, but what the key point about the whole meteorite death scenario is they don't have to hit you to kill you. As we saw in Russia, which had an airburst at 10,000 feet, you can be harmed by a meteorite without being hit by a meteorite, because it's all the second and third order effects of the meteorite strike that cause a problem. So that 700,000 odds really takes into account the once every 100 billion years sort of extinction level event meteorites, all the way down to, we don't even know the number of meteorites that cross Earth's path every day, because most of them are the size of a grain of sand.
Yep.
And they all vaporize. So it's that interregnum of extremes that sort of you can get the effect of a meteorite without being hit by one, which is really important to remember, because in all of modern history, we have unreliable reports from ancient history of people being hit by rocks from the sky, which we can't corroborate. But in all of modern history, where we have good records, we only have one instance of anyone actually being physically hit by a meteorite. So who is the one person in history that we know actually got hit directly by a meteorite?
Wow. No, that's a great question. Because, I think, when people hear that, like you say, the idea of how you're going to die by a meteorite, the image that pops into your head is this, baseball-sized rock coming through your skull at some extreme speed out of the sky. And you're right. That's not how it would happen. But so there was someone who was actually – now, did he, maybe I'm asking a spoiler question here, but did he survive?
The victim was only mildly injured. I will say this. They were hit by a ricochet. So even in this particular case, the person who was hit, it wasn't the direct impact from the crash path. Is it hit something else and then ricocheted into the victim.
Oh, wow. Excellent. That's even better. Oh man. Well, I'm happy to hear that he survived, and we'll look forward to hearing what the bigger story on that one was, because there's definitely a story behind that one for sure. And of course, we'll be crossing our fingers and hoping that none of us join the ranks of the very extremely elite individual who. Who was actually hit by a meteorite?
No, it stop playing with fireworks. That's my takeaway with this. You're much safer that way.
Yeah. Fireworks bad. meteorites, okay. We can live with that. Well, Jay, I'm gonna pull a short here today. Like I said, I'm trying to keep on a fairly tight schedule. But I know that you've got a lot more stuff going on, and people can find that as always at jaygarman.com. .net, and they should also follow you on Twitter at Jay Garman, and they can also too. Do you have like a Facebook page? I've never actually asked. We're friends on Facebook, but I don't know if you have a public facing Facebook page.
No, I just do the personal one. I don't consider myself famous enough to go have like a brand page or anything.
That didn't stop me. There's no.
Okay, let me rephrase it. I'm too lazy to go out of my way to maintain a Facebook brand page.
There you go. All right, that sounds better. That sounds better. All right, well, Jay, people can find you, like I said, at Jay Garman on Twitter or, of course, jaygarman.net. Great places to follow up with you, and we will follow up with you next week.
All right, take it easy, buddy.
Fantastic. Thanks again, as always, Jay. Talk to you soon.
All right.
Jay Garman. Jay Garman, always great to have him on and around. You know what? I think I am going to do just a few very quick spots here. Now, our sponsors come to us from all over. We love having them. WRLR is a volunteer and community station, so it's the sponsors that really keep us rolling. Please consider that as you listen to us, and consider sponsoring the show or the station. We'd love to have you as a sponsor, and there's a lot of great benefits that come with that, not the least of which is the fact, as I just mentioned, we've got 200,000 potential listeners terrestrially, and then of course to our podcasts also rebroadcast the sponsorship play and listeners. Listen close and stay tuned. You are listening to WRLR. This is Tech Talk, and I'm going to be right back with Alex Knapp of Forbes. Don't go away.
You're listening to 98.3 FM, WRLR LP, Round Lake Heights, Illinois.
Ultra Printing in Grays Lake, Illinois is a proud sponsor of WRLR. Ultra Printing has been family owned and operated since 1985 and was founded by the late Edward Mahoney. Ultra Printing can help you with all your color printing needs, including company and wedding announcements, business cards, envelopes, business stationery, and brochures. Ultra Printing at 155 South Wick Street, Grays Lake. Open Monday through Friday to serve you. Ultra Printing General Manager Dominic Mahoney can be reached at 847-680-8880. Remember, when you need printing, you need Ultra Printing.
Since Comcast came into the Lake McHenry County area as the primary source for cable TV, they have shown themselves to be one of the most community-minded companies anywhere. They graciously have provided our studio facilities with cable TV services so that we may monitor nationwide news, and with CHSI high-speed internet service so that we may stream our broadcast signal via the web to increase our coverage area to include a global audience. For more information on their basic cable, digital cable, or high-speed internet services, their website is www.comcast.com.
All right, we are back, and I'm calling Jay by accident again. we're trying to get hold of our good friend Alex Knapp from Forbes, and he's going to come on. I think we're going to talk a little bit about those meteors again, possibly, at least to start with. Good morning, Alex.
I'm here.
There he is. Alex, you are on air on the Tech Talk Show on WRLR 98.3 FM. Welcome. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
It's my pleasure.
Man, no, it was such a great day, too, to have you come on. You know, as I said, we kept talking about, well, what are we going to discuss? You know, and I follow you on Facebook, and I follow you on Twitter. You've got a fantastic blog on Forbes, and just coincidentally, of course, the sky fell. I guess I prayed hard. You know, that was what happened. It just I needed it. It happened, and here we are.
There you go.
Hey, you know, before we don't jump in though, so now I follow you. I know you. What is your official title, role, or how would you describe who you are with Forbes?
Sure. Well, I'm a staff writer, you know, and write about science and technology for Forbes. I'm also our social media editor. I work on our social team, on our Twitter, Facebook, other feeds, with a couple of other people. Mm-hmm. So.
Mm-hmm. Oh, excellent. And I mean, you know, obviously you have some sort of a science background in addition to the journalism background. Is that just an avocation, or was that something that you had originally you know, kind of been interested in for a career?
Oh, well, yeah, I was a biochemistry major, and when I got around to my senior thesis, I never planned on being anything but a scientist. until I did my senior thesis and realized that life as a scientist involves a lot of boring lab work, and I was not temperamentally suited for it. And God bless the people who are, because they make the world happen. But that turned out not to be for me.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. I had the same epiphany as a philosophy major that. It was like, gosh, you know, that was fun, but do I really see 40 more years of this? Nah, I don't know. Oh, excellent. Well, so back to the topic at hand, though. You definitely have a love for space, though. So it was great.
Yes.
When this happened, and so I knew what we were going to talk about then. This was an amazing thing, and I think, you know, not just because it happened, of course, this has been happening throughout recorded and pre-recorded history, but the fact that we had so much visibility to it this time around.
Yes, thank God for corrupt Russian insurance officials.
Yeah.
You know, we got a lot of this on dash cams of Russian drivers because Russian traffic officials and insurance officials are so corrupt that Russians have been putting cameras on their dashboards as a means of self-defense from bad lawsuits and fines and tickets and things like that.
Yep.
So thanks to mismanagement of the Russian government, we got awesome meteor footage. So
yes, exactly. Yeah, all those dash-mounted car cams. That's fantastic. And of course, you could have them here in the U.S. There just isn't the need for it. So yeah, not only were they available and they had the video, but of course, too, thanks to social media, they were able to be uploaded virtually instantaneously and were available around the world.
Yeah, apparently, I was reading an article. Apparently, Russian TV is so censored and boring that dash cam videos are like, you know, entertainment for Russians. So,
and I've seen a few. I've seen a few of these. There was one I know with there was like a fender bender kind of thing, and a sledgehammer was involved, and you know, things like this, and. It's like it's odd and disturbing, and at the time even I was thinking, boy, that was an odd thing to just have that camera going, you know, anyways. But so this meteor didn't cause us a lot of grief. It came into a, you know, somewhat populated area. I guess that the injury toll now is over 1,200, something like that. But obviously, you know, this was not an enormous piece of rock. What size do they believe this was now? Uh-oh. Did I lose you? I think we might have lost.
Nope, sorry.
Oh, there he is. There he is.
I accidentally hit the mute button on my headset.
not a problem.
The rock was about 10 tons, according to the Russian Academy of Sciences, but it appears to have been largely composed of iron, which is why it held up. And kind of caused the damage that it did. It was also going incredibly fast. You know, by way of reference, it's going about three times faster than the asteroid that gave us a flyby. So even though it, you know, wasn't nearly that size, the composition and the speed gave it a lot of energy. But thankfully, nobody died. There are a lot of cuts and bruises. I think a few hospitalizations for broken bones, but by and large, buildings appear to have taken the bulk of the damage, not people, which is a good thing.
Yeah, and we were just talking with Jay Garman, who comes on regularly. You know, that most of the damage expected even to be done by meteors and meteorites that hit is not from direct impact. It's really from those secondary forces, you know, the sound barrier being broken and things like that.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So
yeah, that's absolutely the case. I mean, when you think about it, you know, we're not that big of targets compared to everything else. So we're hard to hit.
Yeah,
and we move too.
Well, yeah, exactly. I think that's the key takeaway from this is to keep moving. Now the bigger one, of course, the 2012 2012 DA something
DA 14.
That's it. The DA 14. The big daddy. That one, yeah. came to some people's minds desperately close to us. That was within satellite distance.
Well, within geosynchronous satellite distance, which are far away by design, so they don't get hit by space debris and things like that, because they have to maintain one position over the Earth's surface. But yeah, you know, it was pretty close.
Mm-hmm,
you
mm-hmm.
know, 17,000 miles, I think, at the closest approach. Definitely cause for concern. But on the other hand, that's also twice the diameter of Earth. So that's still a pretty big miss.
Ah, okay. You know, I hadn't heard it put in that perspective. That's
yeah.
That's a good point. I mean,
look at it this way: if it was, let's say, you were standing in the middle of a stage, and there were two people, you know, standing very close next to you, you know, the asteroid would have hit the guy three, you know, two guys away. So
yeah,
you are just fine.
So if I was in a production of Chorus Line,
right?
If I'm in the middle of my second kick, I wouldn't have had to worry too much. It would have been the right. The person two down from me. Okay, all right.
Yeah.
I just wanted to get that image clear in my mind there. but of course, I mean, you know, space is an awfully, awfully big place, and for it even to come that close is possibly a little bit worrisome. And now I know this particular asteroid, 2012 DA14, this actually intersects our ellipse twice a year, I guess, something like that, right? Or twice every revolution.
Yeah, but we're able to keep pretty good tabs on it. So it was actually discovered by a group of amateur astronomers in Spain. And once they confirmed the finding, it's been tracked for over a year. And I think scientists have its motion, you know, picked out for centuries. And, you know, no worries about hitting us.
Mm-hmm.
So
now... have you heard about or know anything about ATLAS, the Asteroid Terrestrial Impact Last Alert System? I guess that's like on the budget list. I don't know if it's going to be funded more or less now.
It'd be nice if we funded a little bit more, you know, but. Yeah, it's one of those things that we definitely need to do more of. We do have a near Earth asteroid tracking system that is run out of the JPL at Caltech.
Hmm.
But we don't really have too much in the way of planning what to do with it if a big asteroid were to come by. But on the bright side, one interesting finding that came out, I want to say a year and a half ago, is that there are actually about only half as many near-Earth asteroids as we initially thought. There's a new space telescope that NASA put up in 2011 it's called the Wide Field Infrared Survey Explorer. They just call it WISE. And it scans the Earth for nearby asteroids and really cut the numbers in about half. There had been a lot of false readings and reports, and with infrared, we were able to get a much better handle on what's out there and what was just a false echo. And so on the bright side, there's a lot less out there that than we thought initially.
Yeah, no, that is good news. I know, of course, you know, this certainly should not be top on our list of worries as we go about our daily lives, but you know, we as monkeys tend to kind of focus on on what's shiny and bright and momentary in our evaluation of risk. So
It's one of those things, though. It's a small chance of happening, but if it does happen, the consequences are big.
Yep.
So, you know, it's worth paying attention to. I mean, if the dinosaurs had a neural tracking system, we might all be speaking what are they on Doctor Who? Slurian today.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. now, or either that, or they would at least have had a couple of days to panic and which is maybe the best we could manage as well. There's been some great novels just recently, in fact, about that exact situation. The Last Policeman is one I'm thinking of. If you haven't read it, it's a fantastic book. It's dry and somewhat slowly paced, but it's very well done.
Oh, I don't know if anything can. I haven't read that one. I don't know if anything can top Lucifer's Hammer for me.
Man! Oh yeah, I haven't thought of Niven. I haven't thought about that book for a long time. That was fantastic.
Yeah, Lucifer's Hammers. You got the fat pasty IT guy with the How Things Work book versus the cannibal Christian fundamentalist. How can you beat them?
Exactly. I've still got that on my bookshelf. I'm gonna have to pull that one down now. That was well before ebooks, so I'll have to go back to the old paper. Which begs the question then. So great. So we have Atlas, we have telescopes giving us warning and things like this. So what? I mean, other than the ability to panic and throw our arms in the air and rake havoc and destruction upon the people around us, what can we possibly do? I don't see any Bruce Willis's stepping up to
but you know, the funny thing about that is that plan would never have worked in a million years that they did in that movie. But there's also almost no chance that an asteroid that size would suddenly pop up on our radar. It would have caused too many changes in the gravitational field of the bodies around it that it would have been a lot harder to miss. The DA 2014 is about the size of an office building.
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably why it took a little bit longer to catch. On the bright side, if there is a bright side, had DA 14 hit, it would have caused damage. If it had hit a city, probably would have wiped it out. If it had hit the ocean, you probably would have seen some tsunami activity. But it wouldn't have been a civilization killer.
Mm-hmm.
Not saying bad things wouldn't have happened if a city or two was destroyed. But in terms of, humanity suffering its last breath, that wouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
For a big enough asteroid to do that, we'd probably have a good couple decades of notice. I think we could scramble a response with a couple decades notice.
You would hope
I would hope so.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah.
Hey, maybe having like an office building sized asteroid splashing into the ocean, other than the tsunami stuff, wouldn't be the worst thing that could happen anyways. Would force some sense of community among the Earth's peoples to combat this. But then also too, just think of the impact on global warming. You throw up all this steam into the air and start blocking light for a little while, give us some time to catch up on reducing our carbon emissions. I'm starting to lean towards thumbs up on the asteroid stuff.
It would still be bad because we already having a problem with ocean ecosystems as it is. So it probably would wipe out the fisheries industry.
Oh, if I can't get my salmon, okay, now, now or my grouper, you know, I'm now you're talking. So what? Say something like this does occur though, and we've got one, and we've got a decade, two decades of response time. You mentioned the Bruce Willis going up and drilling a hole and putting bombs in things as visually exciting, probably less than effective.
No, my personal favorite potential method was developed by a grad student at MIT who ran a simulation and showed that it would work if we actually got a couple of clouds of paintballs and painted an asteroid white. it sounds silly, but it would reflect electromagnetic radiation to the point that it would actually nudge the asteroid out of the way.
So the basic concept is you increase the albedo. It's like the solar sail idea of
exactly
of that. Interesting. So this would be photons. It would be solar wind. It would be any sort of electromagnetic material. Now, rather than just being 95% absorbed, would be reversed, 85% reflected, and thus pushing this thing out of the way.
Right. Yeah. Over the course of he tested it on Apophis, which is a big asteroid that's flying by in 2029. He said, with 20 years lead time, you could get it out of the way.
Wow. Okay. So that's kind of the cutoff point. 20. And that's, you think about that too, though. That's pretty amazing that that's all that it takes is, because I can't imagine that nudge is, we can't be talking about huge change in the orbit. It's got to be a fairly, or the path, it's got to be a fairly small one.
Yeah, it doesn't need a huge nudge if you think about that the Earth is orbiting the Sun. So it's already in motion. It's just a smallest target compared to the rest of the universe. It's just a little bit is all it takes.
So
it's like if a sniper's taking a half mile shot, misses the wind speed by a mile an hour, that can move the shot. That could be the difference between killing a guy and missing.
Yeah.
So.
Yep. Yep. We're just winging him, making him mad.
Yeah. Right.
Just like with the ass, that's what the thing with the white, with the paint, don't miss because you're just gonna make them mad, and then
right,
and then look out. So was there any thought or idea about how to get the white paint to something that is if it's 20 years time away, and we know the speed that these things are moving at, that's really, you have to have an alert in place probably that would let you know more like three decades in advance, right? In order to get your response, get it out there. I mean, that's a huge amount of distance.
Yeah, we definitely do need better systems in place to monitor, and we need different scenarios for moving these things. We can do paintballs with a couple decades lead time, but if we only have a decade, we're going to need to look, for other things to do.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's when we call Bruce and get him up there. It may not do any good, but everybody still wants to see Bruce on an asteroid.
Well, plus he hasn't done a good movie in like 10 years. So, let him retire with some dignity.
Exactly. I love it. I love it. Now, I haven't seen the most recent Die Hard V5 or whatever it is, but
I guess it can't be worse than Die Hard 4. So
good point. There really wasn't too many ways to go but up on that one.
Yeah.
So that's actually, and I'm not a big stop watching in the middle kind of guy. I'll pretty much see virtually anything through, and that was one that I just turned it off. I said, you know, I could be watching like classic Doctor Who or something. And
yeah,
there's
the action stars of the 80s need to accept the fact that they have AARP memberships now. And it's just embarrassing.
Yep. Yeah. And there have been a couple of movies that have tried to, you know, make that work, that mix, you know, not ignoring the age, but embracing it with some limited success. Now, Sly Stallone in his recent thing, from what I understand, and I'm not willing to expend the time or money to actually prove this, it did not do did not do a good job of it.
Yeah, well, at least Sly's in good shape still.
This is true.
Compared to Arnold,
no, I haven't seen Arnold muscling up lately. I haven't really.
he's let himself go.
Oh, that's too bad. That is too bad. You know, I guess it happens to the best of us. But
yeah, I mean, Sly looks great. That human growth hormone is really working for him.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking it was. You know, I had the choice: deer antler spray, human growth hormone. I'm leaning towards whatever Sly's doing. I think that's the way to go.
Skip the Botox. He needs to skip the Botox.
he never really had that expressive of a face anyways. So,
yeah.
You know, I think I think maybe that's not a bad move for him. but... Man, now I want to take us in a totally different direction here. We talked briefly about you know, literature, books, and things like this. I was disappointed. You and I have very similar tastes in literature, I believe. I'm a big fan, as I believe you are, of China Mayville, and you had tried, and I was so loving this concept of having like an internet book club, and you've got enough followers, you had people that have similar interests, and it just didn't work for some reason. And I don't want to, like, you know, hey Alex, you screwed up.
I don't know why it didn't work either. If anyone has any ideas, let me know.
I loved it. I the book itself, Embassy Town, may have been a difficult one to process in a linear fashion as a kind of a,
that's
a book.
That's possible. Yeah, it was a great book though.
Oh, absolutely. No, fantastic. And his newest one, Railtown, is or Railsea, I'm sorry. Also fantastic. If you haven't picked that up, pick that up. That's great. It's a little more traditional in its plot structure than Embassy Town was. So.
I think the problem is that sci-fi is has grown to be a much more challenging literary form. As opposed to fantasy, seems to get dumber every year and more popular.
Yes. Oh gosh. And this is, I've been complaining about this to my wife, is it, so I read almost everything I read through ebooks, which is great. I'm still a complete cheapskate though. I hate paying for things. So I go to the library, and our library locally has got books I can get through the library on my iPad, on my Kindle. No, you know, right. Whatever. It's fantastic. So, but to go through, if I don't know exactly what I want, the browsing experience is it's not just bad. It's actually painful to me, because if I click on the sort by most popular books.
Oh yeah.
Oh my goodness! It's all teen vampire sex. It makes me want to scream and tear my hair out, which I occasionally do. And it's very, very difficult. Very difficult to go through.
Well, you know, the teen vampires aside, there's actually some great young adult fiction. I really liked The Hunger Games. I thought the third book that everyone hated was the best book. So
yeah, I'm with you. I read them as well. When my sons, I have a 13-year-old and a 10-year-old, and when they were reading it, I picked them up as well. Now their new thing is Divergent, and I haven't grabbed that.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one either. But what I loved about the third Hunger Games book, it is so rare in our culture to have a hero with PTSD. and she did. Like, yeah. if any sane human being going through the shit Katniss did would go nuts.
Yep. Yep.
And to show that instead of being, you know, a stupid comic book superhero, I thought was a brilliant choice.
You're absolutely right. And, you know, that hadn't occurred to me. And the way that she evinced this problem, you know, with the apathy and the sorrow and the things, I think was actually pretty darn realistic.
Yeah, I thought so too. It's probably why a lot of people didn't like it. They wanted their ass kicking superhero. But you know, she was a little girl, and she wasn't. I don't even think she was 18 when the novels ended. You can't put a kid through that. You know, horrors like that, and have them come out well on the other side without, you know, medication and therapy.
Exactly. Well, and you know, and that was, I think, a really one of the more shining points of the book, was that it did not, as exciting as the Hunger Games themselves were, the point was clearly not to glamorize violence and not to glamorize that. And you know, and their mentor, played very, very well by Woody Harrelson in the movie, I thought, you know, was a great example of this guy who's just a wreck of a man, you know?
Right. Yeah. I thought that was brilliant. I thought, you know, what made those so great was showing the psychological effects of violence and what living in those, you know, conditions really does to people. And I think that gets overlooked when people read those. I think that's too bad.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. And I wholeheartedly recommend those books. I thought those were fantastic as well. Alex, I'm sorry. I'm just looking at the time right now, and it just occurs to me. I'm like, I'm right
did
at
we
the,
run out?
We did. I knew it would happen. I think I warned you ahead of time that the 30
yeah,
minutes
did.
Goes incredibly fast. And I knew we would have enough to talk about. I think, though, Alex, hopefully you've enjoyed this as much as I have, that we can...
I did. I had a blast.
We've got to do this again.
I think we can manage.
Outstanding. You know what? I'm going to keep you on my short list. We've got a number of great guests coming in the coming few weeks here and so on. But I think I think you and I have got to rekindle this and do this again the next chance that we get and continue the discussion and hopefully not just because an asteroid hits the Earth.
Yes, let's hope to bypass that one. So.
Alex, where can people find you online? Where do you tell people to hunt for more Alex?
If you go to blogs.forbes.com/AlexSnap, that's probably the easiest way. You can also follow me on Twitter at thealexsnap.com, or not .com, just at the Alex Knapp.
At the Alex Knapp. And I will put those links on the facebook.com/techtalkwrlr links as well. So people will definitely be able to hunt you down and find you and as that podcast comes out. So, again, I got to rush us to a close here. But, Alex, thank you so much for your time today. Just a lot of fun.
All right. Thanks.
Take care. Have a great weekend.
All right. Bye.
The Alex Knapp. What a great guest. I love having guys like Alex on, and I was not kidding. We are going to make a point of having him back on again. I love surrounding myself with people that are smarter than me, and we can have a lot of fun and talk and have a great time. I hope that you guys enjoyed it as much as I did. Fascinating stuff about the asteroids and all that as well. And man, I, you know, no time at all for cool sights of the week, of course. You know, we didn't talk music with Alex, but I know, and I promised Alex that I was going to play a song that he particularly likes. I do as well. Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds. If you haven't listened to their stuff, You like it a little bluesy, you like it a little jazzy. Great stuff. This is the Ship Song. It's a bit mellow, a bit down tempo, but I think you're going to like it as much as I do. It's off of the Good Son album, which has been digitally remastered in 2010. Again, Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, the Ship Song. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks especially, shouts out to Alex Knapp, Jay Garman, Dave Sparky Saganaki. What a great week. What a great show. Come back and listen to us next week as well. You've been listening to Tech Talk on WRLR 98.3 FM. Take care.
Come sail your ships around me and burn your bridges down. We make a little history, baby, every time you come around. Come loose your dogs upon me and let your hair hang down. You are a little mystery to me. Every time you call around, we talk about it all night long. We define sail.